You're with Joe and Sabrina. Roots and Shoots, 720 ABC Radio Perth and WA.
G'day, Sabby.
Hello, Joe. Do you know, Slim and I had this little program going where we wanted to bring Dolly Parton to Perth. Remember that, Slim? And we played the songs and I did a little recording for her. Not singing, mind you. Oh, look, the screen's gone. But she still hasn't come yet.
Oh, Slim, come on.
We haven't given up, though.
He's had her before, you know.
Ooh,
he's had her
devil.
Before. He's spoken to her.
Yeah, but we want her here live in the flesh.
We really do, don't we? Yeah, love a bit of Dolly. Love a bit of Dolly. You know what else we love?
What do we love?
We love a corpse flower. We love a corpse flower. Now, Sabby, I've been asking everybody for their favourite smell and their least favourite. I love Coxie down in Baldivis's views. He says, look, some say the smell of a newborn baby. He counters this and says you cannot beat the smell of leather on a new Harley. I think Coxie's a bit of a motorbike rider.
I think Coxie might be a bit favourable towards the – I actually agree. There's something about a baby. Like you just breathe that baby in and it goes through your nose and throughout your entire soul.
It's intoxicating.
It is so beautiful.
Just continuing this for a moment before we hear more about the corpse flower. Andrew reckons coconut is his favourite smell.
Okay. Yeah.
Cat poo, the worst.
No,
it's pretty bad.
A lot worse.
Okay. Someone's saying boiled egg stink.
Oh, yeah, sulfur.
Worst smell, rotting rubbish. Best smell, freshly baked bread. What do you reckon the worst is then?
Definitely, without a doubt, dead rats in your ceiling.
Oh, that's pretty bad, isn't it?
Yeah. You can smell it as soon as you open your front door when there's a dead rat in the house. And I don't know what happens with rats when they decompose, but it is a very, very distinct smell and there is nothing else like it.
And then you got to go and get rid of it.
Well, if it's way up in the ceiling, I tend just to think, rot away now, and you pray and hope for 45 degree days and it just sizzles away.
Prawn shells in the bin when you haven't wrapped them up and then you forgot that it's not bin day for 6 days.
Crustaceans. Mm. Crustaceans. And it's to do with the enzyme underneath the exoskeleton. That's okay. True. I forgot about those.
Okay. The smell of rain. So many people are saying the smell of impending rain.
Yeah.
Matthew's always so poetic in his text. He says the smell of the coastal scrub when you're down south. It's a smell associated with summer, the beach, sunshine. And you can keep them coming. Now, I did promise you to bring you the news of Smelony because there are some people that have described the smell emitting from a corpse flower as pretty terrible. It has finally bloomed at the Adelaide Botanic Gardens after much anticipation, and hundreds of punters queued up to catch a whiff before the smell faded. Here's what some of them told ABC reporter Isabella Cabone.
It's such a magical plant when you see it's like something you've never seen before.
It was very tall and it smelled disgusting. It
did have a bit of a rancid smell here and there, but and potentially the smell of a bit of roadkill.
Some people relate to maybe like a dead rat or a fermented cabbage. Some people think it smells like cheese. There's about 70 different compounds that actually make up the aroma. So the reason it actually smells is actually to encourage an insect that may have been visiting another flower that might have got pollen over its body, and then it comes to this flower and disperses the pollen.
And you've actually, in real life, seen one.
Yeah.
Did it stink?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Because they usually have them. They have them in the hothouses, in the greenhouses. And so, because that's an enclosed area, you don't even have to open the door. The minute you go in, you just go, that's where the corpse flower is. I mean, apart from the fact it's extremely large. But the thing about the corpse flower or any of those, there's another bulb called the dead horse lily because that is what it smells like. The smell is emitted at different frequencies and over a long period of time. So those flowers want the pollinators to come in over a long period of time. So there's this sort of rhythm that the smell pulses out at different levels at different times.
Plants are amazing. Plants are amazing.
So clever.
We do need to pause briefly for headlines and a weather update, but Chris the truckie, Savvy, has just said, driving down the road and you pass a cattle truck, it's definitely up there with the petrichor smell.
True.
He's onto something.
A little bit of the hoo flung dung coming out the trailer.
That's it. And Jules says, freshly cut grass is absolutely divine.
That is nice.
The dead rat. She's with you. Not such a good smell. Now, Mike's just planted ginger in a pot. He hasn't watered it yet. Can you please let him know how long until he sees growth on the top? Why haven't you watered it yet, Mike? Is that the right thing to do, Sadie?
Well, look, I know on the internet forums they say when you put the tuber in, not to water. I totally disagree. Don't forget that ginger has come out of the ground. It's been dried. So moisture around the tuber initiates growth. So please water it. You just can't overwater. Otherwise, the tuber actually rots, the rhizome. Actually, not tuber, it's a rhizome. So you do need to water the rhizome when you put it in, and then you will need to water once a week. And as soon as you see that leaf emerge, you will need to then water it every couple of 2 or 3 days.
Okay, good on you. Let's head to Ardros. I think Zanna wants some advice. Hi, Zanna.
Hi, Sabrina. Hi, everyone else.
Hi, Zanna.
Hi, how are you going? Our garden's looking beautiful, Sabrina. The orbifolia is about to flower. The wattle bird was skipping through my tomatoes this morning. I'm not sure if it was looking for bugs. And my question really relates to when I do my daily garden wander in the morning.
Yeah.
I know you talk about like having a diary and writing down what you've done and what you've observed.
Yeah.
And what's the best way to do this? Like, should I have like a calendar diary and I write down each day what I did and I applied my wedding agent or whatever? Or should I have like a lawn section and then write the date so I can go back and look when I last put the wedding agent on?
Do you know what I do, Zanna? I have an app that's on my phone. Yeah. So what you can do is you take photos of whatever it is. And then you load those into your garden calendar and you've got photos, you've got info, you've got the date because that's on the photo, and then it's all there in your phone. And it's
a
really good way of doing it. So if you just Google garden calendar app, then there's a few of them. Most of them are American, so they're not really suitable for down here. In Down Under, but just go through them and find one that's got, you know, exactly what you need for the information you put in. But I find it so good being able to take a photo and put that in the calendar.
Oh, that's great advice, Savvy. Zanna, have fun recording it all. Good on you. 1-300-222-720 if you've got a question for Savvy. I just want to go to Jenny, who's between Floriot and 2J, and they have got some peaches and plums that are unusually small, munted in her words. Mm. The plums are withering on the trees, the peaches are dropping off or taste fermented. Are they just neglected? Have you got any management advice? Should they be yearly fertilising plan? Or they want a yearly fertilising plan? Yeah, they do look a little munted.
They're very shrivelled. they're not looking their best. And the leaves on the tree are showing nutrient deficiency. It almost looks like water deficiency, or there is definitely something wrong in the soil. The plums look like they could actually have a rot, but it really does look like it actually looks like a water problem, as in not enough. It doesn't look like rot. It's just that they're not developing. And the leaves look terrible. It could be that the soil is too heavy and it's just too dense around the root system. I would have a little dig, get a, you know, I don't know if anyone uses a hori hori knife. They are such a good garden tool. They're a Japanese sort of, it's like a cross between a really thin hand trowel and a knife.
Oh, but that it could be for getting weeds out between pavers as well.
Perfect.
Okay.
So with the hori-hori or whatever you can find, the very thin hand trowel, you need to dig a hole around the base of the plum and the peach tree and just see what the soil is like down there. It could be that the soil is just very heavy.
Okay. I think Jenny, this is Jenny who wants some advice.
I just caught the end of all of that, Sabrina. Hello, Sabrina. I've rung you many a times about my 2Joe property with really dense clay soil.
Okay.
We're up on the top of the hill.
Yeah.
And I suspect that we also have an erosion issue in terms of the topsoil all gets blown off. It's very dense clay, yes.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. I think have you put gypsum down and compost and...
Oh, I've done a bit of that, but probably not enough. So can I start now fertilising the soil a bit more regularly?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
How often and what should I use?
So spring is the big time. So spring and early summer.
Yes.
And then you ease off, you know, once during autumn and then, of course, nothing over winter. And even in winter, Jenny, I don't know how big the trees are, but
they're well established.
Okay,
yeah.
So even if you dig a moat around the trees and then fill that moat with compost and cow poo, some gypsum, some powdered gypsum in there, just to try and get a bit more airflow through the soil.
Beautiful. And how much water do you think they should have through summer? I mean, obviously water is gold up there.
Yeah, I know.
We're watering twice a week and they've got direct water on them.
Okay. That should be enough.
10 minutes? Okay. That should be enough. So look at the soil first of all.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Sabrina.
Thanks, Jenny.
Once again. Cheers.
Bye.
Roots and Shoots, gardening with Joe and Sabrina. 720 ABC Radio Perth and WA.
1-300-222-720. I've got a gazillion texts coming through, but we like to talk to you. We're very friendly, aren't we Sabby?
Ah, we welcome you with open arms.
We are sometimes slightly ridiculous.
Ah!
Often, even, most of the time.
Most of the time.
Do give us a call. Can I just go back to smells for a tick?
Oh, yes.
Because I've got a message from somebody who says there's a community of us who are born with congenital anosmia. I'm not sure if I've pronounced that correctly, which means they're born without a sense of smell, which does have its bonuses, but, of course, they miss out on all the beautiful smells. So
food. Imagine not being able to smell food.
Our sympathies, absolutely, with that respect. But then you do manage to avoid the revolting smells people are sending through. How's this? John says, when I was living with my mates in my 20s, we had an awful smell in the kitchen for weeks, discovered a dead mouse in the toaster that we had been using.
Oh my God, that had to have been a house full of boys.
John does say the toaster was thrown out after that. It is truly disgusting.
Gag just thinking about that.
Derry says that the best smell, cut grass and babies and roast dinner, bad smells, overripe bananas and getting the pup's anal gland squeezed by the vet.
Oh, yeah, you do. You definitely don't want to be.
Not very pleasant. Not very pleasant at all. And Digger Man says there's nothing worse than a big stinking tomcat's leave and it's behind. Mm. Yes, fair call.
Do you know also with the human body we can smell toxins in plants?
I didn't know that. Mm. So that you should sniff something if you're not sure.
And there's many other things that tell you the plant's poisonous. But that is one of our survival things that we have not lost yet. So, you know, particularly plants that have a milky sap like euphorbias, you can actually smell the toxin in that. So don't eat it.
Maybe also don't eat the container of rotting broccoli that someone found in the fridge. Absolutely putrid. They say that is not a good smell.
Brassicas, when they go off, they really go off.
They really do. I think Stefano has got a question for you, accompanied by a photo. So, g'day, Stefano.
Hi, how are you, ladies?
Yeah, good. What can we do for you?
I've got a couple of sujoa trees in the front yard. Yeah. Mm. Never had any fruit from them. I've had a few flowers, but one of them this year, as you see by the photos, it's got all these discoloured leaves on it. Is it getting too much sun?
It looks exactly like sunburn.
Okay, I thought they were sun-loving plants.
Well, they are in New Zealand. they love the sun in New Zealand, Stefano. But I reckon it's when we had those two really hot days. Are they quite small? Yeah. How old are they?
Well, that one that I've shown you a photo of, it is very small, but it's like maybe 3 years old. It's not thriving at all.
Yeah. It's definitely sunburn.
Okay.
The only thing you could do is to put, you know, some shade cloth around it and spray it with the plant sunscreen spray. You can get a sunscreen for plants.
This blew my mind, Stefano, when Sabby first told me about it. I was like, what?
And you spray it on the leaves and it will protect it for about 6 months.
Oh, okay, great.
Yep. Can't give you a product name, but if you go to a hardware store or a nursery and say you want the spray on sunscreen for plants, they will give you the stuff.
Off you go and spray those. Were they magnolias? I can't even remember.
No, Fijoas.
Oh, Fijoas. Sorry, Fijoas. Good luck, Stefano. It is 1-300-222-720. If you've got a question, let's check in with Robin. Hi, Robin.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, good, Robin.
That's the way. I've got a Dorothy Gordon grevillea.
Yeah.
And it's got like black spots on the branches.
Oh, okay.
And we're wondering if we're both watering it too much.
Now, what suburb are you in, Robin?
Carlisle.
Carlisle, okay. Mm-hmm. Doubt very much that you're watering it too much. Now, the spots that are on the leaves, can you scratch them off or are they actually inside the leaf?
No, they're on the stem.
Oh, they're on the stem?
Yeah.
And can you scratch it off or it's inside the actual wood of the stem?
I think you can scratch it off.
Okay, so it could be scale.
Mm.
So it's either scale or sooty mould, and they get sooty mould because they have scale. Or it's a fungal disease and you don't want it to be the latter because the scale and sooty mould, once you get rid of the scale, you get rid of sooty mould and then everyone's happy, including Dorothy. So you can use a potassium soap spray.
Uh-huh.
So you spray that on. You're going to leave it for 5 days. Then you're going to blow it off with a hose. Then you're going to respray 12 days after the first spray, leave it another 5 days and hit it with the hose again. Actually, the water, not actually smash it with the hose. We don't want any beating of plants here.
No, Robin. Not Dorothy.
Not Dorothy. Dorothy doesn't take well to a beating.
So it's potassium soap.
Yeah, it's a potassium fatty acid soap. If you ask somewhere, if you go to a nursery, they'll know exactly what you need. If you go to a hardware store, perhaps not.
Okay. Now, Melissa. Oh, Melissa, I think we've all been here. Yeah. Bad smell. They just opened today. Lunchbox found at the bottom of the school bag with unknown content.
Yeah.
Because it's been, I can tell you right now, about 7 weeks of school holidays.
Yeah.
And, oh, Melissa.
I'd throw the lunchbox out.
I think I'm with you. We love being sustainable.
Oh, we do,
but that's
too much.
I do love Troy's message. Troy says the best smell is a freshly ploughed paddock after rain.
It is too.
And John also said Ashira's the wool from the
Ashira
shed.
Yeah,
beautiful.
That's a nice smell.
Beautiful. Paul's been patiently waiting. Let's head to Helena Valley and find out what's happening with the fig. G'day, Paul. Oh, sorry, try again. Hi, Paul.
G'day, how are you going?
Yeah, good, Paul.
Yeah, the problem I've got a small fig tree in a pot. It's about 3 foot high.
Yep.
And it's got like all these gnarly looking like pimples that are all along the stems.
Yep.
And on the leaves, it's got like black spots all over the leaves. that are gnarly as well.
Yep.
And if you spun your finger along it, it's like a red colour when you pop them.
Yep, yep. So is your fig tree an adolescent, do you think? Might be just coming of age.
Yeah, it's only about 3 or 4 years old, but these all the figs that it had on it have dropped off. It's only got one on it now.
Yeah. Okay, so you have got a hard scale. It's a fig scale, and actually a lot of figs have had it this year. So
why have you got a theory as to why that is?
Well, a really wet winter and a very mild entry into summer. So the scale, the thing, the little round pimple thing is actually the protective cover of the insect that's underneath that lives inside that little protective shell. So when you squish it and you get either red or orange on your fingers, you've just squished the actual
bug
insect itself. So now what we do with scale is you can either just scrape it off yourself with a scrubbing brush. You can squish along the stem, but it's much harder doing that on the leaf. So there's two things you can use. You can use a potassium fatty acid spray, like I just said to our last caller, or you can use an oil-based spray. Now, the oil-based spray you cannot use once temperatures are above 33 degrees, and if we're going to get a heat wave because that cooks them. You've just put oil and you've barbecued your tree. So you can use those when it's mild. It needs two consecutive sprays, fortnight apart, and you blast it with the hose in between those two sprays. There are little birds that come and eat the scale because they love the honeydew, and also geckos.
Oh,
geckos.
We
love
geckos in
eating
our garden.
Scale. Okay. Yeah, so or you spray with an oil or a soap spray.
Okay. It is 8 to 2 on 720 ABC Perth and WA. I'm going to just go to some text questions.
Yes.
Debbie from Broomhill says she's got a large hydrangea that's potted and it grows really well to about 60 centimetres, beautiful leaves, but it's not flowered for 2 years. It's in the shade, it gets enough water, it's pruned and it hasn't shown one bud.
Okay, so Debbie, hydrangeas actually need quite a bit of sunlight, and the most important time to give that to them is immediately after winter when they start shooting new leaves. That's when you fertilise, when they start to shoot new leaves, and you need to make sure they've got enough sun in those early stages of shooting. So I know that they may get burnt in summer if you've got them, but give them all morning sun or dappled light and lay off fertilising after that spring period because you're going to get lots of foliage but no flowers. So fertilise in spring, and then if you want to give them something a bit later in summer, give them sulphate of potash.
Okay, sulphate of potash. Patrick would like a suggestion for a plant or a shrub to grow under their large paperback tree that's on the verge.
Oh my goodness, you could have anything. You can have any kind of Eremophila. You could have kangaroo paws. You can have the beautiful Adenanthus lighthouse, it's called. That's a really lovely one that will do. There's a gazillion Eremophilas you could grow under there. You can have ground covers like the Evolvulus. What's it called? Evolvulus blew my mind. That's a pretty one.
Ooh.
You can have...
I reckon that's plenty. I think you've given Patrick quite a list there. Quite a list. Have a look at them, Patrick, and then you can design a beautiful garden under that paper bark. Now, Glenn's in Yokine and he's repotted a maiden's hair fern and he found these white grubs in the old soil and he's saying, are they good for the soil or should he be...
Well, I would actually sift those out myself because they're going to chomp. They're not going to eat the top part of the plant. They'll certainly hook into the root system.
Yeah, get rid of them.
Get rid of them.
Very quickly, Two Rocks resident has quite a sheltered back garden, wants to plant a plum. Mm. Any suggestions as to what might grow up in Two Rocks in a shady back garden?
I reckon a Narambeen plum. Or a Satsuma.
There you go. There you have it. Angela says that, back to scents for a moment, lemon-scented eucalyptus leaves, lemongrass and petrichor are just the best smells. The rotting potato, on the other hand, that you eventually discover on return from home after a summer holiday that you had dismissed as a concealed dead mouse or rat, is possibly the worst there is.
I'm going to find out why and what it is about potatoes that makes them smell
so. We've given you homework.
I know.
Thanks, Abby.
Bye.
Chat soon.